And maybe it's a reason to have a little bit of a discussion. I don't know. But, and by the way, something I did not add last night. Yesterday afternoon, Ramona and myself buried Abby in the garden that he loved so much in our backyard. So every time he'd run back there, he'd just, you know, he'd take off. He'd front porch, turn your eyes, he was gone, and he was into that garden. Might have been the catnip that had something to do with it. Anyway, look, I got about 2,500 emails, and I'm going to tell you that 98% of them said, don't worry, you're going to meet that animal in the next life. And people sent the poem, The Rainbow Bridge, and, you know, on and on. It just went on and on. I want to thank you all so much. But the common thread, and it was an incredibly, almost every one of the emails, people thought that their animals, that animals, period, have souls. And that the ones that you had relationships with, if there is a next life, you're going to meet. Now, that's not particularly biblical. We are a Christian nation, right? Pretty much indisputable. We're a Christian nation. That's not in the Bible. The Bible says that only human beings have souls. So, therefore, only human beings could go to the other side, if that's what you believe. But that's not what people believe, at least not people who listen here. Because I'm telling you right now, out of 2,500, 2,390, 2,490, had that to say. So what are we to believe? Certainly, it's obvious to me that all of you, or at least a great majority of you, I'm sure some non-pet owners are going, what's the big deal? You know, geez, a cat, give me a break. But we form a bond with animals that is as strong as the bond we form with other human beings. And because the love they give is unconditional, maybe in some cases a very different kind of bond. I don't want to say stronger, but just very strong. And so I guess that's what you all believe out there. I know I do. I sure know I do. Listen, late news, there was just an earthquake outside Tokyo, not a giant one, preliminary 4.9, off the northern coast of Japan. Ramona was telling me a 6-point-something. I'm not sure. We'll see how this comes out. This one says 4.9. I'm not sure if it's in addition to or this is the one, but it's one of many earthquakes. I mean, we have had them now up and down the West Coast in a manner that's beginning to worry a lot of people I know. Had a lot of us thinking about emergency communications. It's kind of like the Earth is warming up for some event. And I wonder if the rest of you kind of began to feel that last week as they just kept on rocking. We'll look at the world news in a moment. Top of this coming hour, Dr. Doom, one of the most controversial guests we ever have on Coast. He's called Dr. Doom for a very good reason. Very briefly, I don't really like the world news. It's never good. But very briefly, a suicide bomber walked calmly into a popular Baghdad restaurant at lunchtime Sunday and killed at least 23 people. Eating plates of lamb and rice, at least 23 dead. It's every day now, right? In sworn testimony that contrasts with their promises to the public, the FBI managers who crafted the post-9/11 fight against terrorism say that expertise about the Middle East or terrorism was not important in choosing the agents they promoted to top jobs in charge of that kind of thing. Only our government can admit something like that and get away with it. If a large corporation that makes cars or light bulbs or something like that were to promote somebody to the top, the very top of the company, that makes light bulbs, somebody who didn't know a damn thing about light bulbs. Do you think that company would admit it? No, they'd get rid of them. But only our government can admit, yes, we have a war on terrorism, but we're not hiring anybody who knows anything about those who are at war with us. The front runner in Iran's presidential runoff sought to rally moderate Sunday by warning that his hardline opponent would run a totalitarian regime, the statement from the campaign manager for Ayatollah Rafsanjani came amid suspicions powerful Revolutionary Guard might just rig the runoff for conservatives. The director of the CIA says that he has an excellent idea where Osama bin Laden might be hiding, but that the U.S. respects, we have so much respect for sovereign nations that it makes it more difficult to capture the Al-Qaeda chief. Now, where do you think that he might be? What nation could be harboring him? Some nation, apparently, for which we have so much respect that we would not go in and get him. What nation would that be? I mean, is he hiding in London, maybe? Or what? Scientists in Britain have shown that stem cells extracted from human embryos can develop in the laboratory into early forms of cells that become eggs or sperm. The research raises the possibility that one day eggs and sperm needed for infertility treatment could be grown, well, in a dish. Preliminary experiments also suggest that scientists may eventually be able to use the technique to create a supply of eggs for cloning. Wonderful. And so I suppose somewhere down the line, in the next few generations, we're going to meet people and we're going to ask, well, where were you born? Well, I was born in a dish. Yes, sirree. Fine Chinese China. I don't know. It's going to be a weird world out there. If you went back in time and you met your teenage parents, that's Ramona laughing, you could not split them up and prevent your birth, even if you wanted to, according to a new quantum model. You see, everything now is quantum. Well, in the quantum world, this old paradox is finally answered. Researchers speculate that time travel can occur within a kind of feedback loop where backwards movement is possible now. That's it, folks. Back in time is possible, but there's a little hitch. Only in a way that is complementary to the present. What does that mean? Well, it means you can't screw with the past in any way that's going to change it in a negative or even in positive or any way at all. In other words, time travel in a quantum world that we all know is very much ahead of us is going to be possible, but not in a way that would alter the past, particularly in some unsatisfactory manner. Well, the red planet Mars is going to attack, folks. It's coming anyway. It is approaching Earth in a way that we will never see again in our lifetimes. Never. By August 27th, in fact, Mars is going to look as large as the full moon to the naked eye. Now, I have a problem with that, but they say it is so. Mars will be easy to spot at the beginning of August. It's going to rise in the east at 10 o'clock at night, reach its azimuth at about 3 in the morning. By the end of August, when the two planets are the very closest, Mars is going to rise at nightfall, reach its highest point in the sky at 12:30 a.m. That's pretty convenient to see something that no human being has ever seen in recorded history. That's how close we're going to be. So mark your calendar at the beginning of August to see Mars grow progressively brighter and brighter throughout the month. Share this with your children and grandchildren. It says no one alive today will ever see this again. I thought that just happened a year or two ago. And weren't they saying the same thing? Maybe that's an old story. The Universal movie White Noise. Oh, I saw that. I saw White Noise recently. It was released in January of 2005 in the UK. It concerns the little-known paranormal occurrence of EVP, or electronic voice phenomena, in which discarnate voices are captured, at least for the purposes of the film, through the medium of white noise, the soft swishing sound that one finds, or could find, before the airwaves filled up. In some cities, you virtually have no white noise, one station after another. In the film, Michael Keaton plays Jonathan Rivers, whose wife Linda suffers a sudden mysterious death. Later, he is contacted by a man who claims to be receiving and recording messages from the dead, including some from Linda herself. Initially skeptical, of course, he eventually becomes an EVP researcher himself, and not all of it, I might add, is positive. In the October 20th edition, 30 October 1920, that's a long time ago, of Scientific American, Thomas Alva Edison, America's most celebrated inventor, whose track record included invention of the light bulb, the electric light bulb, the phonograph, and moving pictures, wrote the following, quote, "If our personality survives, then it is strictly logical and scientific to assume that it retains memory, intellect, and other faculties and knowledge that we acquire on Earth. Therefore, if personality exists after what we call death, it is reasonable to conclude that those who leave this Earth, who would like to communicate with those they have left here, I'm inclined to believe that our personality hereafter will be able to affect matter. If this reasoning be correct, then we can evolve an instrument so delicate as to be affected or moved or manipulated by our personality as it survives in the next life. Such an instrument, when made available, should record something." And of course, when you race ahead to George Meek's fascinating research, then you have to believe that certainly may be true. One more quick thing here. I swear to you, this is true. It's from the Arizona Daily Star. And I'm thinking it could put me into a big money-making business. Maybe your rugged SUV never goes anywhere wilder than the mall, but you now can look like a wilderness adventurer with spray-on mud. For owners who don't want it to look like they might just be driving an unnecessarily gas-guzzling SUV, a little splash signals that the vehicle spends time tracking the backcountry. The product is a brainchild of Colin Douse, a businessman from England. He lives in a village close to the Welsh border. Spray on mud is an urban camouflage designed to give the impression that you're a very serious off-roader. Douse, a web designer, came up with the idea about a year ago while sharing a few pints with friends at a local pub. "It's genuine local dirt," said he, "strained to remove stones and any other debris, mixed with water and a secret ingredient that Dow says helps it stick to the vehicle's body." He says, "Don't use it to obscure the license numbers on your license plate," warns, "that's a finable offense. Otherwise," he's going worldwide with this. He is selling so much mud now that it says, well, quote, "some will hold this product up as evidence that there's a bunch of people out there who aren't taking these vehicles off-road and therefore don't really need them," he worries. "But the mud just can't sell fast enough. It's going for $14.50 a quart right now. $14.50 a quart." And actually, the headline is "Spray on Mud Gives SUVs Panache." And this tells you, ladies and gentlemen, this and, oh, yes, there's a big market for, did you know this? Fake cell phones. Plastic, non-functional, fake toy cell phones. What are they for? There, so that you, too, can hold a cell phone to your ear as you ride down the street and be seen by others who pass you by, presumably having them thinking, oh, my God, successful over there. Look at him, talking on a cell phone. So now we have fake mud for the SUV, and we have plastic cell phones to indicate importance. Ain't it a wonderful society we live in? Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
How do you follow up a story like that?
I have no idea, sir. How you doing?
This is Matt, the security guard, calling from Tampa. First off, I wish your birthday had been happier.
Thank you.
But I want to talk about hybrids and black helicopters. I saw my first black helicopter tonight.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I mean, a lot of them are black now. You have to bear that in mind. I mean, black is not unusual for a military helicopter. It blends in so well with the night sky.
Yeah, but it was broad daylight, and it was the weird thing was it wasn't a Huey or a Black Hawk. It was one of the little observation helicopters, one of the old OH-6s.
Huh. Well, maybe they just, maybe it's like spray on mud, sir. Maybe, you know, people who own helicopters, if they wanna really look like they have cojones below the blades, paint it black. I don't know. So anyway, it was a black helicopter, and what else?
Oh, hybrids. I've seen two of them in the past few months.
Hybrids.
Hybrids, human and other species, aliens.
Well, that's bigger than the black helicopter.
Yeah.
How do you know they were hybrids, as opposed to just, you know, odd humans?
Well, I think it's on your website. They showed the pictures of the old skulls, where the back of the head, the occipital area comes out like 4 or 5 inches beyond the neck, and it's almost conical as opposed to being rounded.
Like cone heads.
Almost, yeah.
From the rear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you approach any of these hybrids, attempt to converse with them, or say welcome to Earth, or, you know, whatever?
No, I was just observing. But it was, the head was one thing, and then the facial features, they're both, their eyes were a little bit wider set.
Yeah.
They were rounder.
Yeah.
The faces were flatter.
Yes.
It was just rather interesting.
And you didn't manage to work up enough nerve to actually go and approach one of them?
No, I was going to, you know, I mean, how do you approach somebody? Hi, are you human and what else? That'd be just a bit tacky.
Well, I mean, not if they're really as described. I mean, you could do something like, I think I've seen you before. Where are you from? Something like that.
Yeah, and they come back with Alpha Centauri then.
Yeah. Alpha okay. Centauri. All right, sir. Well, thank you very much, and have a very, very good night. And good next time you see one, see what you can find out. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
This is Wade calling from Louisa, Kentucky.
Yes, sir.
The reason I'm calling tonight was about the earthquakes and stuff. It's all been going on.
Are you beginning to feel something? I mean, when you're getting news of like 2 or 3 a day,
yeah.
It starts to feel weird, like, you know, oh, man, something's coming.
Well, you know, yeah, I am. Probably all the times I've talked to you or George over through the years, this is probably the first call that's actually gave me some trepidation because of what I believe is coming very, very soon, possibly in the next 2 to 3 days. Right, I believe we're on the verge of having multiple cataclysms, both natural and man-made, throughout the world.
Well, a good friend of mine who's a ham operator down in Southern California, down in Burbank, California, matter of fact, thinks we're about to have a big earthquake so much that he has been spending the last week Velcroing his equipment to the desk and to each other. You know, there's Velcro like everywhere.
Yeah, you know, Californians are so used to earthquake, it doesn't bother them, but what's been going on with the last week, they're getting spooked, and it's not just in California, it's been going on throughout the world here in the last, you know, they had a pretty good one up in Alaska this week. And
well, there's one of two things, sir, that's going to turn out to be true. Either these are a warm-up for a really big event, or these are small earthquakes relieving pressure and preventing a big event. It's going to be one of the two.
Yeah, so I'm just throwing it out there into the wind. I believe starting this Wednesday, both natural and man-made cataclysms.
And remember, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Art. This is Brian from Oakland.
Brian from Oakland. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment about the new podcast.
The podcast. Oh, man, I've been getting email about the podcast. Yes.
Yeah, what if, I mean, can't, is there anything that we can do to
No,
help
I tell you exactly food? What's up, man. I bitched myself. I called the network. I said, what the hell's up with this? You can't take the bumper music out of the show. It's like cutting the right arm off. You know, we use bumper music. I do anyway. I use bumper music to sort of accent whatever I'm doing at the time. And here's the deal. If they put the music in the pod thing, broadcast, then they have to pay this enormous, outrageous fee that would then have to be passed on to the podcast users. And so instead of doing that, they chop it out, which is rough, but it makes it affordable for podcast users. So that's what they were faced with. You know, either charge them a lot more or take out the music and just give you the meat.
Well, I guess they have to do what they have to do.
Would you want to pay $20 more?
No, $6 is enough.
Well, see, there you go. So yeah. It's outrageous what they're doing, but it's the way the world is.
One other question. Can you be sure to ask Major Ed Dames in the next hour about his RV lottery DVDs?
And I sure will.
If it possibly pertains to the California State Lottery?
I absolutely will, thank you. I sure will. In fact, you know, if enough people had the ability to read the numbers and win the lottery, that would put the lottery out of business. Or would it? Or would these people that have learned the secret method of determining the numbers, few as they are, keep the secret? And therefore keep the ability to hit the lottery every now and then safe? I don't know. I wonder about these kinds of things, and I'm sure you do too. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello. Are you there? Going once, going twice, going three times. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
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 How are you doing?
Quite well, sir.
My condolences about your cat.
Thank you.
I know it's a hard thing to go through.
Like losing a child.
Oh, yeah. I just lost a little 16-year-old dog that I've had since I was 11 years old not long ago.
Only pet owners can understand this, and others scoff. But, you know, it is. It's like losing a child. It's part one.
Oh,
you know, Abby was one of our family. End of story. Anyway, what's up?
Well, I was watching Meet the Press this morning, and I heard something on there that I actually heard from you first. It's about the guy that doctored all the documents for President Bush about the global warming.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. He had a Senator McCain on, and he was asking McCain about it. And McCain, he just basically apologized about it on behalf of, you know, all the, I guess, Republicans, I guess.
Well, once again, sir, only in the government can you do something like that and sort of get away with it. Look, they don't want to hear about this global warming stuff, so we're going to change the report, and we're going to X all this out, and we're just not going to tell the White House because they don't really want to hear it. So here, let's X this out, and we'll eliminate this and redact that, and before you know it, it reads like just a fairy tale, sir.
Yeah, I hate to tell them it's going to happen one way or another, you know.
It's like hiring people to fight the war on terror who don't know a damn thing about the terrorists.
Crazy world.
Only our government can do that. With our taxpayer dollars, I might add.
Yeah. can I have one more quick question?
Yes.
Last night I was listening to the Encore, and what was up with that preacher guy that called in?
Ah, you referred to the one and only J.C.
Oh, that guy's crazy.
Yes. J.C. has slipped a cog. He did that many years ago, but he is, he's crazy as a loon.
Yeah, well, my grandpa is the same for people like him. If you don't mind me saying, he's nutty as squirrel poop.
Yes, a nutty squirrel. Thank you very much, sir, and have a good morning. Of course, the squirrel poop, that actually makes sense. Squirrel nuts in, nuts out, right? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
This is Cindy from Stockton, California.
Yes, Cindy.
I am so pleased to be able to talk to you. A friend of mine recently, I'd say within the last couple of months, turned me on to both you and George. And George was right when he said the night of your birthday that you are the man.
Oh, that's kind.
You are totally the man.
Thank you, and thank George.
Also, I wanted to give you my sincere and absolute condolences over the loss of your cat.
Yeah, thanks.
I know exactly how that feels. How long did you have this particular cat?
15 years.
I had one 4 years ago that I'd had for 18 years.
Yeah,
and it was the longest I'd ever had any particular cat. And she and I went through some really heavy stuff together. She was around when my husband passed away and my dad and a lot of my family members. And
is
so,
there any doubt in your mind that that cat had a soul?
Not at all. Not
no.
at all. In fact,
no,
I've seen
either.
Her twice since she died.
Well,
in
there
fact,
you are.
I saw her night before last
yeah,
in my hallway.
Yeah, so the number of pet ghost stories are equal to the number of people ghost stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even further proof. I mean, I'm telling you, I got well over 2,500 emails, and everybody said it. Now,
yeah, not surprising.
Well, yeah, it is surprising, because really the Bible sort of says that people, human beings,
right,
are the only ones that have souls.
And that
clearly,
always bothers me.
Clearly, that's not what people believe at all, including me.
Yeah, I know, and that always bothered me, because it's like, if I'm going to go to heaven and my pets that I love so much aren't going to be there, to me that wouldn't be heaven.
Well,
but
yes.
I've seen them. I am not kidding you. I saw this cat, like I said, twice, just night before last, and I believe that the cat came back when she did, even though it's been 4 years since she died, because my house is for sale. Well, it's going through escrow right now, which has to do with the number 8, by the way. So thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome, I guess.
But I believe that that's why the cat came back now. When she did, was because I'm going to be leaving. And I have her ashes here in the house. I had her cremated.
Oh. Well, I had an email from, a very intelligent email from a father and son who had a pet. And they were present. They were there when that pet died. And they saw a little wispy white something at the moment of death come from that animal and move straight up and out. Now, it was a well-worded, well-constructed, intelligent email. And so what was that? Huh? What was that? If there's no soul, then what was that? And if there is a soul, then how does that jive with what we're told in the Bible? International line, you're on the air. Good morning. Oh, wait a minute. I'll push the button. Now you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Dina. I'm calling from Mexico.
Oh, really? What part?
Well, northern, just south of the border.
Do you live there, or are you vacationing?
Well, partially. I go back and forth. I have a place up in the States as well as here.
Okay, so you drive through that eternal wait border checkpoint.
Indeed.
Yes.
Yes, I do. And I was just thinking when you were advertising the or mentioning the ad for the dirt, canned dirt, that we really don't need it here. You'd lose money in Mexico.
Well, no, but see, what an export it could be. I was thinking
absolutely.
The same thing. We've got dirt with a high clay content here, right? and it would really stick nicely to the side of an SUV. And so I was thinking, boy, what a business opportunity. You know, just, I'm sure, I mean, you can't patent mud, right? So the guy doesn't have a patent on this.
No. We should do it.
That's a good idea.
Let's get together on this and talk about it.
Well, that way you could have, like, Mexican mud. Now, there's a real ballsy SUV. It's got Mexico mud on it.
And it looks it, too, every time I come through. I actually was calling. I was a little surprised that the gentleman who called from Kentucky
yes.
to talk about earthquakes didn't mention this weekend's quake in Paducah.
Oh, yes.
Because Paducah being not too very far northeast of New Madrid, Missouri.
Yes, where they had one of the biggest earthquakes ever.
Yes, exactly. So I thought, well, I wonder if Major Dames has any comments on that. I'm really, really looking forward to hearing him this evening.
All right, well, coming up shortly, and I can sure hear your pets in the background. Thanks for the call.
Thank you again so much.
You're very welcome, all the way from Mexico. Yeah, Mexico mud, that'd be especially, I don't know what's the right word. I don't know, it would have special panache. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good evening, Art.
Yeah, hi.
How you doing? This is Jeff from Grand Rapids, Minnesota.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I wanted to tell you, I think you're the best. I've been listening to you for a long, long time.
Oh, it's very kind of you. Thank you.
I was kind of calling up. You're welcome. Sorry about your cat, too. I was calling about the Osama bin Laden, Porter Goss thing, kind of. I was kind of wondering maybe if that would be Saudi Arabia where he's hiding.
No, because, see, I don't think we'd be afraid to send a special ops team into Saudi Arabia and grab his butt. Maybe it's some country like Britain or I don't know. But if it were up to me, I mean, we're pretty ruthless, and we really want his tail end. So I think we'd go into Saudi Arabia unless he's with the royals.
Right, right. Well, I don't know. I think he's over there in tied up in the Middle East, because I don't think he could have got anywhere else. But that's just my personal belief. The English thing is kind of interesting to me. I don't know how he would have got there, but
I hope he's tied up too, with like things of bamboo going up his fingernails. You have a good morning, sir, and thank you very much for the call. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Bell. How are you doing?
Fine, sir. Where are you?
I'm calling from Indiana, and this is my, I think, 12th time to talk to you on the air.
Wow.
Yes, sir. I was calling about the article on Mars you had earlier in the evening, how it's supposed to get in our sky as big as the full moon.
Yeah, I don't believe it either.
And then we have, like you said, a year ago or so. Wasn't
I could swear, yeah. There was an article just like it. I think it was Mars going to be as close as it would ever be in our lifetimes. How can that happen twice?
Yeah, it wasn't going to get that close for another 50,000 years or 63,000 years or something like that. Now it's going to be as big as a full moon. Well, I must say they must be using the metric system to fit within 1 year. 3,000 years.
It's more than the metric system, sir. It's I don't know, the kind of calculations they did at some of those companies that went belly up.
Yeah, some kind of weird gazintas or something. Also, I wanted to let you know that years ago we had a German Shepherd die, and we had the animal, the pet, for a number of years, and it was like a member of the family.
Yes,
and you do love them in a different way. It is a different kind of affection you have for them because of just the relationship you have with them and what they bring to the family. It really is a different thing, and it is always a hard deal to lose a very good friend like that. And so, I wanted to extend my sympathies toward you and your wife over the loss of your close friend.
Thank you so very much. And that's kind of like what I got. And as I was saying, of all those emails, 98%, 99% all talked about animals' souls and meeting them on the other side. Well, how can that happen? That's not biblically accurate. I'm sure there are people who would say otherwise, but a real, true, literal reading of the Bible, I think, says the not that at all. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Steve from Fayette, Iowa.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you know that spray on dirt brings new meaning to the term pay dirt.
Pay dirt. Yeah, for that guy, it's pay dirt, all right.
Yeah, and I ran into a guy a few years ago who I had seen and hadn't seen him for a while and saw him again, and he was wearing glasses. And he was telling me the new rage where he was from was to wear fake glasses so you appeared to be intelligent.
Yeah, well, now we'll add the guy going down the street with fake glasses, the plastic cell phone, and the bought dirt on the side of his SUV.
And as far as animals having souls, the Bible mentions horses. says Jesus is going to come back on a horse.
Yes.
So our church believes, hey, if they're going to have horses, they're going to have everything else. So I'm looking forward to doing a little fishing.
Well, you're certainly right about the biblical reference to the horse, but of course it doesn't say specifically the horse has a soul. It simply indicates he will come back on a horse.
So
you're right, but really, still, this belief is somewhat heretical, but obviously shared by a majority of the population. Now, I wonder if that represents a sea change in what people believe. I mean, out of that many emails, 2,500 emails, to receive that many people who just simply, firmly, without any doubt, believe that is a study in itself. It really is. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, the Bible says that in the afterlife, the lion will lay down with the lamb, but they'll be vegetarians. They'll eat straw, and little children will play with snakes and not be bit. And it also says in this life, we can ask the animals and the birds to teach us. So the Bible nowhere says that they do not have souls. You will see your animals in the afterlife. That is a biblical view.
Okay. Well, I knew that I would have somebody come along and say essentially what you've said. But
that's true.
But, well, it may well be. But there are others.
But to show you how people are ignorant about the Bible says there's a new heaven and a new earth, and we don't go directly to heaven. We go to a new earth. Most Christians believe they're going to heaven. That is the wrong choice. You want to go to the new earth for the thousand-year reign of Jesus.
The new earth.
Right, the new earth, not the new heaven.
All right, the new earth. Well, there are some who don't believe that earth is exactly heaven-like in any regard at all. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, is this Lex?
Is it who?
Is this Art Bell Show?
This is Art Bell.
Oh, okay, hi. I'm a first-time caller.
Yes.
And I was just calling to see how you would respond to a little funny anecdote. Just listening to you for the past 6 months, I came to a conclusion or summarize of, you know, just the overall understanding. And I came up with a question that out of everything going on, do you think that a monkey would want to become a man? And if there's like aliens or something that are coming here or something, why would we go to the zoo and try to become an ape and are we falling that way?
You mean are we headed toward becoming apes? Now there's a disastrous thought. I mean, everybody normally thinks that man came from ape, evolved from ape. Well, not everybody, but the scientists do, that we came from ape. But what if it's going the other way and it's happening too slowly for us to notice and we're actually all slowly becoming apes?
Well, it's just that I don't think that...
How do you feel about bananas, sir? They're good?
They're good for... feeding the
pod listeners. The bumper music was Who'll Stop the Rain. Not my guest coming up. The world's foremost remote viewing teacher, Major Edward A. Dames, Major U.S. Army, retired. That's going to bring up a question right away. Is a decorated military intelligence officer and an original member of the U.S. Army Prototype Remote Viewing Training Program. And I'll tell you right now, I know every ounce of that to be absolutely true. I had Major Dame's full military record, and he did exactly what he said he did. He served as the Training and Operations Officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit, PSIINT, and currently serves as executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, a private consulting group. The technical consultant for the feature film Suspect Zero, a Tom Cruise, Paula Wagner production. Ed coached Sir Ben Kingsley and played the role of an FBI remote viewing instructor in the movie as well. I now have a DVD copy of that movie, which I have not yet watched, but I'm going to plop it in and watch it. I got an email from somebody that I'm going to, I think, hit Major Dames with in a moment. As a matter of fact, why let him warm up to the question? Major Dames, in a moment. I believe the solstice is upon us today in most time zones, being the longest day of the year. Luke in Baker, Louisiana, says, "Hey, Art, the word you were hunting for to describe the Mexican mud for the SUVs is machismo, an exaggerated masculinity. The patented name for our Mexican mud product would likely be, logically be, mudchismo." Right. Ed, welcome to the program.
Happy Father's Day, Art.
Thank you. From the islands, we speak to you, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
For another couple of days.
For another couple of days, and then it's back to good old California.
Good old California.
Mm-hmm. Ed, I had an emailer that really sparked my interest earlier tonight, and he suggested to me, I know that what is claimed in your bio in the beginning is absolutely true, because I do have your military record, but this person said, "Look, Art, we've got hiss on this line. Do you hear that?"
Let's see. No, I don't.
You turned off the hiss. What was that?
Did it go away? It was a fan. Fan's off.
Oh, thank you. I know how it is in a way. Anyway, look, what the person said was, once a military intelligence officer, always a military intelligence officer. In other words, you may retire, but you never really, totally, fully retire from a job like that, and you still have contacts, and, well, the emailer was frankly suspicious that somehow you're still involved in some backdoor way with military intelligence. How do you respond to that?
That's CIA. That's generally true with CIA personnel, but that's not true with, as most of my colleagues in the former colleagues know in military intelligence.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that particular unit that you were in, it just isn't true as it would be true of a CIA agent.
Correct.
Although I can imagine, really I can, Ed, circumstances where even though the official program is gone, the government in a moment of desperate something or another might get hold of somebody in your field, if not from the old group.
Well, I became the keeper of the keys, and I'll talk a little bit more about that tonight, when America abandoned its Sci-Spy unit. And indeed, that door may need to be opened again in an emergency, but then again, it may not. As far as direct, official or unofficial work right now or connection with the government, there is none. Otherwise, I would not have been able to go to Eastern Europe.
Well, Ed, I think that's crazy. I mean, we had people, since the closing of the unit, blow up buildings in New York, hit the Pentagon. Never has the world seemed more dangerous. So what about that? I mean, isn't it to the point, just about to the point? Look what we're facing in Iraq right now, and God knows what we're facing as a nation.
Art, it's the same logic as one of the news stories that you read, where people are move up into the top positions, controlling positions of very important agencies, but have no experience with the threat.
God, it's true. It's true. Only in our government can that level of incompetence succeed.
It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and actually, you turn on the fan.
No.
Okay.
There's nothing now, silent.
Interesting noise. All right, so look, I understand that you just have returned from what used to be the Soviet Union. You were in, where were you?
Ukraine.
You were in the Ukraine. Why?
I spent 2 weeks in Ukraine.
Why?
Well, the trip was very historic for me.
Actually, I understand you talked to my producer, Lisa, from the Ukraine. Is that right?
I did. We had bad connection on my cell phone, but I did talk.
Huh, I'll be darned. So what were you doing there?
I had always wanted to go to Eastern Europe, and I'll give you a little background why. more time I spent spying on the erstwhile Soviet Union, the more respect I began to gain for the very novel approaches to war fighting,
yes,
weapons development. And you may or may not know this, but before and after, both before and after my tenure as operations and training officer for the Psi Spy Unit,
yes,
I was one of just a handful of science and technology targeting officers, and my job was to prevent technological surprise on a future battlefield in some very specialized areas, exotic weapons, biological warfare, parapsychology.
I'm curious, how would you go after, for example, let's say the Soviet Union had some new horrible weapon that we weren't aware of. How would your unit target and even hope to understand what it was they were seeing?
Well, part of the tradecraft is, of course, classified, so I won't get into that part. But,
uh-huh,
but you can imagine how we did it the other way. We first get reports of this information reports that we'd have to check out. There's something over here that may represent a threat. So I would have to orchestrate a penetration mission or at least an intelligence collection mission, and that would include agents that we had in the area, people who had already sold out Russia, their own country that we were paying.
Right.
And then we would get locational fixes from them or possible locations fixes, and I would target our satellites to look at those locations, then sit down at a light table and see if there's anything really there. And if there is, then I could call in some more exotic systems. And, of course, the Psi Spy Unit helped a lot.
All right. The way I understand remote viewing, you end up essentially drawing, for example, drawing something that comes from however you're able to do what you do. But what I was wondering is, if it's not classified, how you could take that drawing and then have somebody interpret that it's some new sort of, I don't know, example, laser, space laser weapon or something very exotic like that.
We sit down. It's not just sketching. It's also a description, detailed descriptions and summaries of what we have there. Now because we're trained technicians, and that's my job, to be a trained observer, I may not necessarily understand what I'm looking at, but I can describe it succinctly. What I do then is sit down with an expert in that field, let's say a laser physicist or a directed energy weapons guy, and I'll say, okay, this is what we have. Now, that person may automatically or spontaneously recognize what we've drawn, but then again, he or she may not, and then they would ask me questions, and I would say, okay, I'll be back. Go and hit that specific focal point. For instance, we're dealing with a directed energy weapon. Is this thing a neutral particle beam weapon? What kind of polarization does it have? That kind of thing. And I would have to re-cue the question.
I got it.
Yeah, return in my mind.
So you would assign the target. In other words, say you'd report to somebody and they'd want to know about such and such, so you'd assign a target, right, and gather a group and give them the target.
Generally speaking, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what did you think of the Ukraine? How did you arrange your visit to see and take in what?
Well, you have to know, I don't know if civilians know this, but for intelligence officers, depending on where you are and in what position, there is a period that sometimes 5 years, sometimes 10, and it used to be 15, where there's travel restrictions. You can't go anywhere near the countries that you were spying on.
Right.
Okay. So that ended for me several years ago. Oh, because secrets have a lifespan, as you know. Some are longer than others, but most secrets have a lifespan.
Right.
For instance, let's say the stealth bomber during its development was a pretty well kept secret. But you can't keep a secret like that forever, especially when you feel the system. So my travel restriction was over, and of all of the weapon systems that the Soviets had, the one that was the Leviathan, the most deadly weapon on Earth, was the SS-18, the NATO codename Satan, interestingly enough.
Satan.
And
why?
There's a picture of it on your website.
Why so named?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Was it that bad, meaning good?
I don't think that's the reason that a lot of times the names are just pulled spontaneously out of the computer, and the computers spit this one as the next up name for a foreign threat weapon system.
Oh, yeah. I see one launching right there. Oh, my God. Look at that.
Yeah, it's nasty looking, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's on. Lex put that up for
me. And they've still got them, don't they?
No, they don't.
They crunched them?
That was MIRV. That had up to 10 multiple independently targeted reentry vehicles. Yeah, that means up to 10 U.S. cities. Bye-bye.
Right.
But because of our treaties, we have been actually helping the Russians demilitarize the SS-18.
Crunch them up, yeah.
But, no, they're actually used now. The body is still made in Dnepropetrovsk, where I went. The body is still used, and they now use it to launch U.S. satellites because our space shuttle is not dependable enough to do it.
Makes sense?
Yeah. So it's an off-the-shelf.
So you actually, then, Ed, you went to that particular city, huh?
I went to Dnepropetrovsk, and it was a historic event for me. I felt like I was stepping back into the 1950s.
Ed, I guess I can ask you now, was that particular city, that Russian area, was that an area that you concentrated on a lot and had a lot of assignments?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. It was a closed city.
No wonder you went there. I see. Okay. Got it.
Well, it wasn't just that. It was that because it made the most deadly thing on Earth, and we were never able to really defeat that system if we wanted to. We weren't even able to adequately collect intelligence on it, not to mention put something together in terms of an anti-ballistic missile system that could defeat it. It was undefeatable. And it was the most deadly weapon on Earth. So it had a lot of meaning to me.
Yeah, I bet it did. So what did you find on your visit to the Ukraine? Was it what you thought it would be?
I didn't have a lot of preconceived notions about the country itself, because my focus was on weapon systems there.
I can understand your curiosity, though, about that which you were told to concentrate on for so long.
But the people in the city, I was really shocked to find out that they really believed that the Cold War ended, and this is what they believed, that the Cold War ended because of that missile, and not because of the economic collapse of the erstwhile Soviet
Union. No kidding. So, in other words, instead of Ronald Reagan just outspent them and scared them to death, and we just wore them down, from their point of view, the SS-18 thing ended the Cold War. It just scared us so badly.
Correct.
That we threw up our hands.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
That was surprising to me.
And they sell that to the general population there?
They did. And
Wow. That's amazing, Ed. That's absolutely amazing. But I guess when I think about it, not a surprise, every country, including ours, propagandizes its own citizens. I wonder if the whole prospect of a nuclear full-out, you know, conflict just finally scared both sides so damn badly they agreed to get rid of a lot of it.
Yeah, I'm not a politico. I'm an intelligence officer, so that's not my job, and my thoughts aren't along those lines.
Got it. So,
but the people in the country were extremely friendly, extremely warm, extremely accepting, very poor. Their education, very educated, much more so than most Americans. But there are no jobs for college graduates. It's a new democracy, which is exciting, as you know, and... As I got closer to the Russian border, however, and talked to Russians, I found that the Russians were very sarcastic in terms of the way they referred to Ukraine. I mean, most people in Ukraine speak Russian and not Ukrainian until you get over to near Moldova and the Carpathians. So, and the Russian people were pretty bitter about giving up the breadbasket of the former
I bet. Yes, I bet. I made a visit in many years earlier, Ed, to Russia. In fact, I had lunch in the Kremlin.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Russia was just in terrible condition. And I'm not sure that it's much better off now. You should have some word on that. But when I was there, it was pathetic.
It's pretty pathetic now, actually. Even though the people are very warm and friendly, the infrastructures are from like 1920s. The water only is turned on for two-thirds of the day.
Wow.
I felt like I stepped back into the 1950s in terms of just being on the streets. And it's going to take them a while to progress economically, that's for sure. But I have to say, I had a good time. The streets are much safer than here in the U.S. People are really warm and friendly. There's some interesting observations. High school kids walking around drinking beer after school was interesting to see.
Really?
But there's no rowdiness. It's just part of their culture. And I'll talk more about cultural differences when we discuss mind warfare tonight. But
yeah, that's going to be a pretty serious topic tonight, isn't it? Mind warfare.
I went to Ukraine, which is exactly 12,000 miles away from my islands here, right through the center of the earth. It's as far as you can go. I went as a tourist, but I'm going back soon as a student. I'm going to study Russian in the city of Odessa. I've always wanted an excuse to study Russian.
So. Did you have many... I know you speak fluent, Mandarin?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Did you have many conversations with Russians and Ukrainians?
I had many conversations with them, but in some parts of Ukraine, the only way I could communicate was with Chinese students who were studying in Ukraine, because very few, in outside of the cities, very, very few people speak English.
Did you ever drop on any of them in conversation that you were once an American spy?
Yeah, I told them the truth.
Did you really? How did that go down?
They pretended like they didn't hear me, which I thought was interesting.
Really?
Uh-huh.
You know, I can understand that, because here in America, if you encountered a Russian and he told you he used to be a Russian spy, you'd kind of go, whoa. So I would imagine that's the equivalent, sort of not speaking is a whoa.
No, I think I've talked to intelligence officers who spied on us, and we've had good conversations and acknowledged each other's profession, former profession.
Oh,
actually,
really?
Still my profession, but not in the U.S. government.
Have you actually talked to people who were in the Russian mind spy unit?
Art, I met my counterpart after the Cold War ended, Ivan Sokolov.
It says right here, one of the things we're going to be privileged to discuss with Major Dames this morning is an unclassified overview of the existing and emerging threat. Now, that, of course, I guess means to America. Actually, of course, I don't know what it means. Ed, what are you referring to? Are you referring to, when you say threat, are you referring to threat to America, threat to the world, threat of what kind?
Mind warfare threat to America. We're going to be caught with our pants down.
Why do you say this? And if there's an unclassified portion to it, that means there's probably a classified portion as well, isn't there?
I can tell you the topical nature of the classified areas, and then you'll understand what needs to be kept classified and sometimes proprietary.
Okay, try us.
Okay. What we're talking about here is the advent of mind warfare in the 21st century, and I've only cursorily broached this subject on your shows as a guest in the past. Most of the time, I've talked about the passive nature of intelligence collection using mind remote viewing.
Right.
All right, and I think that this particular document that I'm about to refer to has been declassified for the most part. It's a 1970s document that was issued by the Defense Intelligence Agency with some CIA input. It was a national intelligence estimate on foreign parapsychology R&D, research and development.
Oh, yes.
I think it's out and about. Anyway, and I helped contribute to that. It anticipated that early in this century, now, there might possibly be a substantial breakthrough in the defense application of paranormal abilities. And I am telling you now that that assessment was correct. And and we're going to get caught with our pants down.
What was it based on, Ed?
It was based on some sporadic and yet effective experiments on the part of both the Chinese and the Russians in parapsychology areas, not merely remote viewing, but apparently they had some naturally gifted psychics in both countries that were doing things that we've talked about earlier on your shows in terms of Qigong masters being able to reach through glass jars, pull out threads, and those kind of things, and also apportation, again, on the part of the Chinese children particularly.
What is that?
Apportation?
Yes.
Apportation, if you think of teleportation, you think of something being moved from one place to another in the world.
Right.
Okay. The thing that is actually moved is called an apport. The term for the thing that is moved, that is teleported, the term is apport, where what we were looking at in China, for instance, at the time as an intelligence collection officer, were cases where both Qigong masters and certain children were able to disappear things and then recover them somewhere else.
No kidding.
No kidding.
As a human ability to cause something to disappear and reappear nearby, away?
Yes, nearby.
Nearby.
I'm going to talk more about this tonight. In fact, I'll slow down later and talk about it at length because it can get a little bit complex, and I don't want to lose the audience.
All right.
Okay. Anyway, in everything I'm going to say tonight, I just want your listeners to remember that we're talking about a trained ability here. In order to fight any war, you have to train to fight, and that includes a psi war. Without training, it doesn't work.
Right. So the military, our military, Ed, our government would never do anything without training. I mean, that's like basic to anything they do. Any program they have has lots of training exercises involved in it, so that doesn't surprise me a bit.
Correct. And but anyway, in the future, I anticipate that more and more countries, in fact, quite soon we'll be jumping on this Psy War bandwagon. The Indian press, I've noticed, in the last 6 months has already stated that their government has an operating RV group that's had some successes against Pakistan and that the group is modeled against the U.S. unit.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. Our remote viewing program was abandoned because it was politically incorrect. And as I mentioned, I became keeper of the keys by default and out of personal interest, and also because I'm politically incorrect in many ways.
Well, I know you are. And I, you know, it doesn't surprise me, really, after reading some about what our government has been doing, that I've always said, you know, if this works, if remote viewing actually works, then there's no way we cannot be using it now. And that would be conventional wisdom. However, there's nothing conventional about the way our government does things. It's insane.
Well, this unit was a real hot potato, white elephant, and it was scary to people in leadership positions that had aspirations toward even higher positions. And on the other hand, as I've mentioned earlier, it was also very attractive because in a town, Washington, D.C., where knowledge is power, wow, this was really a sexy thing. And so we became the whores, the red light district of the intelligence community. And that includes Senate Intelligence Committee as well. They wanted to use us under the cover of darkness but didn't want anybody, their colleagues, to know what they were doing. So you can understand the position that we were in, and especially as a professional intelligence officer, this was not kosher to me. But China, for example, being politically correct in China means something else, and that something else by no means precludes research and development on psi warfare potential. And I have been in China, and I will tell you that they don't even balk when they talk about these kinds of things at all. And they don't have to rely on the Western scientific method, which requires replicability, but also a theory. The Chinese could care less about a theory. They want replicability, and they want to weaponize that. So I'm watching the Chinese because it looks like they are developing a very viable offensive side program. And note the term offensive, not defensive.
Ed,
it catches us off guard.
What do you imagine the capabilities of a mature Chinese unit might be?
I'm going to get into that in detail.
Please, then. And apportation, I really want to get back to that. I mean, that's measurable. Has a case of apportation, the ability to move a solid object from one place to another, been heavily documented?
In China. Because it won't be documented here, because it's a taboo subject, right? The Chinese, they haven't heard of Amazing Randy and the Skeptical Inquirer. Culturally, they have no problem training and using children.
It's a very good point. In other words, they don't even have the concept of a skeptic because they just don't work that way.
Their culture accepts these kinds of things. And even children, they'll put children together as a group. Remember the movie Village of the Damned way back when?
I do.
Yeah. Well, you know, you don't discount something like that happening because children, they're very happy and they're rewarded when they succeed. And you don't have to ask them to open their minds because it hasn't closed yet. So, you know, you may be looking at a global village of the damned here in terms of China. I'll get into that more in a moment. Because of our cultural conditioning, we scientists don't even, except in laboratories where they haven't made much progress in terms of the metrics and the parameters, even in the Princeton Anomalies Research Experiment, Dr. John, who you've had on your show.
Yes.
And Brenda Dunn, they had no way of evaluating what the dynamics and the mechanics of what was going on in that laboratory where they were attempting psychokinesis. With MIA work, with the Matrix Intelligence Agency work and expert remote viewing, we can model the moments where PK was successful, and we have done that, and I'm going to be elaborating that tonight. That was formerly proprietary, but I'm going to let it loose tonight.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can you give me any idea, Ed, and everybody listening, in how many ways, again, you speak fluent Mandarin, in how many ways the Chinese personality, the Chinese mind, the Chinese culture differs from ours? Is it so different that we would not recognize most ways they think at all?
No, it's not like that. My only experience with another race other than my own like that is the red man. Having lived in New Mexico and had friends that were Apache and Navajo, it's been often said that the white man will never really be able to comprehend the mind of the red man. And I think to some degree that's true. Culturally, it's very, very difficult, even with my friends, to really understand them.
But to speak fluent Chinese, you must understand some of the Chinese mindset.
I do. It is not difficult for me to understand China. And that's why I've been watching them so closely in ways that are very different than ours in terms of cultural conditioning.
Well, that's what I was saying, Ed, that you would have to understand or be able to explain to us why, for example, they don't even blink. They don't have skeptic societies. They just accept, and that's very foreign to us.
Let me give you an example of an uphill battle that I faced in briefing the National Security Council and the White House.
Sure.
As an intelligence officer. Here's my uphill battles were also against the Undersecretary of Defense for Science and Technology and R&D. It's the not invented here syndrome, right? And here's a hypothetical example. The real ones are classified. Okay, Major Dames, of course I wasn't called that then. I was undercover and they didn't know who I was. Major Dames, we can't accept your intelligence assessment, which wasn't just mine. It was a major part of the intelligence community because I worked at the Office of Secretary of Defense level. Major Dames, we can't accept this because the Russians could not have a tactical battlefield laser weapon because we tried to build one and failed. Now I have to sit down and say, Mr. Vice President or, you know, so-and-so, there's a different philosophy in that country, a different culture. Dialectic materialism, for example, allows one to look at the world a different way than we do, and that results in a different educational structure, a different science, a a different engineering approach and a different technology, and that's why they had a Bell cell laser and we don't. I had to do this every time because that's what we call the not invented here syndrome. Our scientists can't do it, so there's no way they could do it either.
So therefore, it's impossible.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And I faced this problem time and again attempting to sell intelligence products to decision makers. Now it can work the other way too. When I retired from the military, first thing I did was respond to Vice President Dan Quayle's request to see if there were weapons of mass destruction in Kuwait. And I reported back that not only were there no weapons of mass destruction in Kuwait, but Iraq did not have them either. But that administration did not buy that report. So it works the other way as well.
I'll say.
Yeah.
All right. With regard to the threat that we face now, I asked you a few moments ago about the potential capabilities of a Chinese mature unit. Mm-hmm. What might they do, Ed?
Let me tell you where we're at in terms of mind warfare right now. I mean, there's two aspects here. One is the I call it the passive side. It's remote viewing. Science is the psychic intelligence. You know, you have human intelligence.
Yes.
Signal and all that. Science is psychic intelligence. I see now that RV is becoming solely accepted into our culture. I mean, it's in video games now. In fact, the producer of a video game emailed me when it first came out asking me what I thought of, you know, their use of RV in the video game, a feature film now has, as you know. It's the same technologies that can be used on the battlefield can be adapted for use in the corporate and industrial world, too. For instance, there's no laws that prevent any trained remote viewer from applying their skill in that area. I could go right into the mind of a Bill Gates and look at their most secret new project. That's industrial espionage or business research, as the buzzword is. RV remote viewing is a significant combat multiplier, so it offers advantages over an adversary or a competitor. In the military arena, however, the key applications areas are three: intelligence collection, and I've discussed that at great length on your show, establishing connectivity and getting in inaccessible places and describing what's there. Then you have a threat assessment, assessing the threat, the specifics, the detailed things about threats, and this we're attempting to preclude surprises on future battlefields or in commercial markets. That's what I've been doing with the Chinese, looking at the Chinese program just as I did the Russian program of extra sensors. That's what they were called when they existed. Then you have another key area, and that's using remote viewing for vulnerability assessment, one's own or others. Where are the holes in radar systems? Porous system, where are the penetration routes, the Achilles heel, or if you're looking at people, if you're vetting and assessing, let's say, a potential agent to recruit, what are their weak points? How can they be co-opted, right?
Sure.
That's the passive side of the house. What I'm going to talk about tonight has never been discussed anywhere on any continent, and that heretofore has been proprietary, and that is remote interference.
Uh-huh.
And that is not, don't construe that with this hypothetical remote influencing, which does not exist. Somebody has been trying to sell the public a bill of goods. There's no such thing as remote influencing using a mind.
All right. That means, in other words, let us say you want to influence the president of Russia.
It doesn't happen.
You're saying it doesn't happen, but this thing called remote interference, whatever this turns out to be, can happen.
Oh, it can and it does, and it is happening, and that's why we better start looking for it on this side of the world.
All right, I'm all up for an explanation. What is remote interference?
Okay. I do want to caveat what I just said about people not being able to influence. A team of trained remote viewers and it can actually. If a person is sleeping, a target individual is sleeping, or if a target individual happens to be in an altered state,
a team
of trained remote viewers can actually
influence.
Make their presence, not influence, but they can make their presence known in a dream state or in an altered state. So, but that's different than influence.
I'm not sure it is. I mean, if you had somebody have a specific dream, for example, that dream might influence some decision they might make.
No, you can't influence their dreams. You can just make your presence known in the dream. That's it.
In the dream.
Yes. You can interfere with a person's dream state, and they'll dream about you or a group of people, but you can't influence the direction of the waking mind using that state. This we know to be true.
Okay.
Okay, but remote interference
yes.
is different. Now, when I talk about remote interference, I'm not referring to these localized types of things where a Qigong master can do what I said he can do, or we're not talking about psychokinesis or telekinesis, the Geller effect, which is our sister science in remote viewing. What we've done using remote viewing is to model mind over matter at a distance, this spooky action.
Mind over matter at a distance.
That is remote interference. And this is what remote interference is. It's against systems, material, not another mind, but material.
Do you mean, for example, that there might be a foreign plane flying over some ocean, and that conceivably a group of Chinese people trained to do this could cause... Arguably, it's the most interesting thing that I've ever talked about on the air, in my opinion. This whole area, this ability of people to affect the weather systems, for example, with their minds, or the ability of Princeton to measure an event occurring in the mass mind before it ever occurs, all of this, the experiments they did with affecting random number generators, I mean, it's just all straight down my alley, and I have a feeling that's really what we're ultimately talking about here, this remote interference is somehow using the same conduits, Ed, that is suggestive of all this other ancillary evidence that there's something going on.
What we did at MIA is model it and streamline it and then try to understand what the Chinese were doing. Keep in mind that the Chinese do not really have expert remote viewers, so they may be able to affect this, but they don't understand the process. We understand the process now, but we have to train ourselves to be able to do it. So the shoe is on the other foot. But I'll walk you through what we know.
Please.
Okay. This remote interference effect, it influences the magnetic field around the target. We don't understand the linkage in terms of mind and the target.
Really?
We know that the influence is at the magnetic field level. The effect, it acts at the atomic level. And mind is not altering the material, but it is somehow interfering with the electrostatic inertial forces at the atomic level. And there's no permanent change. For instance, there's no degaussing effect of a magnet or a magnetic substance.
Okay.
Okay, solid-state electronic materials are particularly affected. And there is one pure element that I have to keep proprietary because we're using it in terms of the size switch development. One element in particular, a pure element, that's very susceptible to this effect.
Wait a minute. Size switch?
The CIA attempted to develop a size switch years ago.
Does that mean a switch that could be thrown with the mind?
Yes. Yes, exactly so. That's what we're talking about here. We're talking about mind over matter at a distance, and a size which would be effectively...
It sure would.
I'm sorry?
I said it sure would. A size switch could be used... you could blow up a bomb with a size switch.
You could indeed. You could indeed. Or transmit information, which was the original intent at CIA level for agents to be able to communicate. Because getting in those old days, getting caught with a telephone in your boot like Maxwell Smart was not only damning, it could be deadly.
I wonder if an ICBM could be blown up. I wonder if a space shuttle could be blown up. I wonder if complex systems could be affected to that deadly degree.
We'll talk about this. I'll continue with this outline momentarily, but let me step aside. You might be interested to know that the Soviet extrasensor team, people on that team, were actually placed aboard intelligence collection ships downrange from the Minuteman missile test. So we would launch a missile for diagnostic purposes from Vandenberg Air Force Base, and downrange a Kwajalein Atoll would be our own diagnostic equipment, but the Soviets were there in ships monitoring the test too, right?
Yes.
And aboard those ships, sometimes, were individuals from the former Soviets extrasensor team. Extrasensor is...
No kidding.
Yeah, and they were attempting to influence the navigation systems aboard the satellites, but they did not know... aboard the missile, but they didn't know what they were doing. And they lacked one thing, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. So they were not capable of doing what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Devices with weak magnetic fields are particularly susceptible. So pacemakers, for instance, would be a good target.
Uh-huh.
Or a clock.
Or a clock, yes.
Mm-hmm. Remember your clock incident?
Very clearly.
Yeah. The remote interference somehow weakens the magnetic field momentarily. Distances are irrelevant. They're totally irrelevant. So it could be a satellite way out there on the edges of our solar system or whatever.
Huh.
So there's two methodologies that we can employ as operators here. We can use a brute force mass attack, which is what I did with your audience against your clock one time. That's just a small example. But it must be effectively directed. It can't be chaotic. So you have to know how to direct that. And then there's the precision-focused attack, which the Chinese are working on and may have already succeeded at doing. You have to hit the target in real time. You've perhaps heard the term retro-PK, where you're trying to influence in the laboratory. Dean Radin and others know about this effect, where apparently mind can influence something in the past and the effects can be seen now. That's a theory that called retro-psychokinesis. It doesn't work with this, with remote interference. You have to hit a target real time.
Hmm.
Okay? Now, that's a precision-focused attack. The effect builds very slowly. It's not a spike or a pulse art. It builds up slowly to threshold observable value. Okay?
All right.
So, first, in order to effectively do this, you must first acquire and connect with the target. So that's why you have to learn how to remote view, because remote viewing effectively does that. You acquire the target and you hold it. You've got a good, strong connection. And then you have to disturb the system dynamic. And that's the trick. So the one half is acquiring your target and connecting and holding that connection, and then not injecting information, but disturbing the target's equilibrium. And the way to do that is targets are really processes. If you take a thing, for instance, your own body or a telephone, it's really a process. It has a beginning and an end. It's decaying. It's a system that's entropic in nature. So we're really attacking a system. We're attacking a dynamic process, not a thing. Okay, that's important to understand.
Right, it's a process you're attacking. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Now, the way to attack, to disturb the process is still proprietary, but I'm going to give you a clue. I'm going to give your listeners a clue, and they'll probably be able to figure this out. Once you acquire and hold the target using remote viewing, if you've effectively mastered that.
Yes.
All right. Here's the hint. Sometimes thinking outside of the box is not enough, because thinking itself is itself a box. So in other words, there are things in this universe that can't be understood by thought, only by feeling. No thought at all. The feeling has, you have to be able to understand things using only feeling. Okay? So what I'm suggesting to you is that once you lock on using your mind, that there is another modality that has to come into play to disturb the process.
The projection of some kind of feeling?
Perhaps.
You're saying that's still classified?
It's proprietary.
Proprietary.
My
the next,
agency.
I see.
Because we want to patent the size switch. And we also want to interfere with... In terms of countermeasures, we would like to be able to interfere with those guys too.
All right. Now, I want to know something about those guys. How far ahead of us in this area are the Chinese?
Probably 15 years, unfortunately.
15 years?
Yes.
All right.
In terms of remote interference, but they're 15 years behind MIA in terms of expert remote viewing. So, you know, there's some cards on the table here.
What I'm going to ask again, what would be a typical current capability of the Chinese team to interfere with something? Give me an example of what could actually be done. You said a navigation system would
navigation
be...
Navigation systems where you don't have redundancy are perfect. Any non-redundant, critical, delicate system. It doesn't matter if they're Faraday shielded or not, because mine doesn't care about Faraday shields. You know.
No, it's operating at frequencies we don't know about yet.
Sort of, yeah, yeah. But another thing to do is to introduce gremlins into U.S. Research, development, test, and evaluation phases of a system. Let's say we're trying to develop a widget, a classifier widget, or maybe we're trying to develop a new type of navigation system. And if you can spy on the U.S. and see where this work is being done, if during the test and evaluation phase you start pinging using this remote interference work, you ping periodically the test phase.
You mean like you ping on a computer?
Sort of. But what you're doing is you're interfering with the test results, and so the tests last longer, or the test agency may think that the product under evaluation is not working. Because it's a very critical moment when you're testing these things, because you don't even have a prototype yet.
Of course, yes. And you're looking for the initial way something is going to react.
Correct. And doesn't our vice president have a pacemaker?
Yes, sir. He sure does. He sure does. Ed, does this wrap around into the quantum world somehow?
This mind field that we're in, I like to think of it as a single dimension and working somehow in what I've called in the past a pre-quantum field, pre-quantum, or some place that exists prior to light. But that's just a layman's terms, and I'm a layman. I'm a science manager, but not a scientist. It's a layman's term for attempting to cope with the linkage between mind and matter, which I do not understand.
Well, scientists don't understand the linkage between, oh, I don't know, like two cells that have been proven to react the same way, that came from the same body now on opposite sides of the world. They can't explain how that communication occurs, but they know for a fact that it...
I can.
You can?
That spot was part of the old Cleve-Baxter size switch experiment.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. It's because of symmetry, Art. Symmetry. That's why twins, they have identical DNA. And DNA, think of DNA as a crystal in any radio oscillator or transmitter that you have. The crystal is cut to vibrate at a specific frequency.
Correct, yes, yes.
Well, if you look at DNA as a crystal, if you have two sets of DNA that are identical, you ping one and the other, the universe sees all those things as the same. There's no difference between them. So they all react at the same time, and I'm not talking about electromagnetically. The symmetry is a scalar effect. You tweak one, mind sees all those other things as the same archetypically.
But I can't get my mind around this, Ed. Somehow there is a communication going on that has to go past symmetry. Symmetry is, I understand the definition of symmetry.
Well, what happens is that the symmetric devices or the symmetric things are the same, and whatever you do to one,
you do to the other,
pings the other, and there's an effect that's observable on the other end.
But you're tossing around the word ping. Ping implies, as it would on a computer, pinging a certain address, for example, and then getting a return of how many milliseconds it took to do that.
I don't mean that way. Then I should not be using that analogy because it's not quite.
Well, it does imply a communication.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And in fact, the communication, for all intents and purposes, is you don't need encryption. Because unless you have that particular crystal or that particular set of DNA, whether it's from a Diefenbachia plant or your cat or anything, if you don't have that particular DNA, you don't have the operating frequency of this particular type of system.
Hmm.
So that means if I want to incorporate this type of crystal, let's say, this type of symmetry into a psi switch, if I take some of your blood cells or scrapings from the inside of your mouth and I grow those in a petri dish,
yeah.
If I take the two petri dishes and I hook them up, I put a small voltage across them, right, and I separate them on two sides of the world, whatever I do to one is instantly recognized on the other side because of the symmetry.
But that doesn't explain still the mode of communication. We can't measure the frequency. We know it goes faster than light, but we don't understand how it moves.
That's why I call it pre-quantum, because it's somewhere underneath the quantum effects. At least quantum effects can be observed these days. This can't yet. I like to think of it as a single... mind is really a monad. It's unitary. You don't have your own mind. You have your own brain. But mind, your brain is immersed as an oscillator in this mind field. Mind is real, but it's a monad. It's a single thing. And we're immersed in this. Our brains are. And we can operate in it, in the field. But it exists as a single dimension. So
how big a program do you think the Chinese have it?
I think it's still relatively small. I know there's only one major officer... and the People's Liberation Army that is in charge of this now. He's very serious about his work.
Well,
yeah, they are using children as well, young children. They're training them.
They're using children.
Yeah, they're using children as well as adults.
I guess I can understand. A child's mind has not yet been taught to close any doors, right?
Right. Right.
Is that what makes the use of the child so agreeable? So...
That's one thing, yeah, and they're so easily trained, and they adapt so quickly to this because it's not like swimming or mountain climbing or whatever. So a child doesn't have to be physically in shape to do this or an Olympic candidate. They just need to be open-minded, and they already are. So they're easily malleable. I've taught many children remote viewing, and again, they cotton right up to it as long as you don't have to explain theory to them where you put them to sleep.
How do you feel about the use of children by the Chinese?
I don't see any moral or ethical problem with teaching a child remote viewing or remote influencing.
Mm.
I just have the moral and the ethical problems of using them for war fighting.
Well, like remote interference,
absolutely.
Like somebody's pacemaker suddenly starting to go on the fritz.
Correct.
And you're saying they're using children, you think, for that kind of thing in China?
Not yet. But they're still in the test and evaluation stage, and they're developing the parameters and the metrics, which we could not do, the degrees, the measurable degrees of effect. As a group, and the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. A group is very, very powerful, very powerful. You get a group of children who are directing their minds, who have been taught to be coherent and direct their focus against the target, and you taught them how to do it. Believe it or not, it's as powerful as any.
I tend toward believing it, Ed. I do. Just from the experiments I've done, the other things that I have found out that are true that I really have a hard time, I guess, grasping in my mind, but I've seen this stuff work, so... What you're saying seems logical, Ed.
Yeah, and where it's going to bite us in the derriere is we're going to start to see things that make no sense but have an impact. And there'll be no way to trace that or establish connectivity except using remote viewers back to its source, which is going to be China.
And so you're saying
they have complete denial.
Will be so much as magic to us that we'll just put it off to unhappy circumstance when something goes very wrong.
Gremlins, I guess.
Murphy is frequently used to explain things that just go wrong.
Yeah.
Murphy's always around. And Murphy's an easy write-off, but you're saying that we're going to see a lot of Murphy. I have a laptop, which has served me well for several years. And the other day, I noticed the screen was frozen, and I listened carefully, and the little disk drive was going about like that. And I thought, oh, God, another disk drive. And so I replaced the disk drive and, believe it or not, revived the machine with a new operating system. But that's Murphy. That's Murphy at work. And what I should have said, obviously, was when that happened, I just this damn Chinese. Just to be certain that I'm sort of on the right track here, even though I gave a comical example, perhaps, Ed, that's the kind of thing that you're talking about with remote interference, aren't you? I mean, for example, let's just say the ability to damage a very important hard drive in a very important place containing very important information.
I would go after the operating system, though, and not your hard drive. It's a softer target. No, really. No,
you're not the only one to have said that.
because the drive has a rather strong magnetic motor.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's a harder target. In fact, I'm not sure at this juncture if that could be done. But certainly the magnetic fields around the transistors in your operating system chip are a very nice target indeed.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I could do that myself. Want to see? No, just kidding.
No, I don't. No, I don't. I've already had enough grief and heartache this week with a little hard drive.
Yeah,
Thank you very much.
Speaking of grief, I've got messages from some of my online students who are concerned that my trips back to Ukraine to study Russian, that I won't be available to teach online, and I just want to make sure they understand there's, because of the beauty of the internet, I'm still going to be teaching while I'm studying, even though I'm away.
Yeah, so as Rush would say, it matters not where you are.
Right.
Uh-huh. Indeed, that's true. So you'll continue teaching online?
I will continue, yes. For the people that order my DVD, Learn RV series, they don't have to worry. I will always be there just as I am today and will be tomorrow.
Okay.
That's my primary job.
You're a very dynamic individual, that's for sure.
I love to teach. It's my primary role as an educator, and it's my business as well. And I like my job.
Maybe you can explain something to me, Ed. Healers, you know, these people who claim that with their mind that they can diagnose and then actually heal an organ or a malady in another human being?
Well, most of the time it's bogus from my experience, but there are a couple of people I know that have actually been managed to pull this off time and again, and I do not understand the dynamic there. You know, Pele, the famous soccer star,
yes,
who retired because he hit the top. There's nowhere else to go. He's the Mickey Mantle of football worldwide. He retired in Brazil, and after a couple of years, the press got hold of an interesting story and ran to see if it was true, and it was true. He had nothing to do in his retirement and was visiting kids in hospitals,
yes,
kids that were terminally ill.
Yes.
And he just went in to pay him a visit and sign his name, autograph soccer balls, and give those to the kids. And
right,
walked
right,
out.
Right, sure.
The kids were walking out of the hospital a couple of weeks later. And these were incurable cancers, leukemias, and things like that. And the press found out about it, and they approached him, and he said, "Yeah, it's true." And he said, and the press asked him, "Why? How is this happening?" And his response was, "I don't know. The only thing I can attribute it to is the fact that I have more time to be with God now that I've retired." That's
well, that's remarkable, Ed. Pele, sure. He is the world star all time of soccer. There's absolutely no question about it. And
but this is not just a one-time thing. It happened over and over again.
When did this news break?
About 4 years ago.
It didn't break to me. This is my first hearing of it, Ed.
He didn't want it. He didn't want to spread that around. But you can search the internet and find out about that too.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. So how is that happening? I don't know. If we modeled it, I think in those cases we're probably dealing with extracurricular agencies.
Well, maybe angels. I don't know. Maybe that angels is a word. You know, I don't know. I just know that there is something now to this power of the human mind. Certainly, I haven't come anywhere near proving to myself that people can heal other people at a distance or even right next to each other, for that matter.
I have a new research project, and it's for me, it's very unlike Dr. Doom, but it's a project I'm doing with a couple of my team members who are interested in. It's optimizing the quality of life. And this time, instead of just attacking health problems, for instance, in a person or an animal, this time it's looking at the modeling or actually researching and determining what might be factors that we do not know about that would increase health and longevity. My concentration has always been on problems, whether it's multiple sclerosis or rheumatoid.
That's right, yes.
Kind of, but this time, what really is the best human diet? Is there a general diet, for instance? How do we tailor this for an individual? Tailor an individual. What are the enhancers that would enhance health and longevity? Is there perhaps something that can restore youth? Or anti-aging and longevity enhancers, that kind of stuff. It may not necessarily be substances, but we're going to start that project, and that's a fun project as well as pretty valuable.
You're right. That's very
Doomish.
Doomish, yes, very undoomish of you. And
people change.
Usually not. So we'll see if it works. So increasing the quality of life and even the extension of life, is that, you envision that?
Yeah, I want to see if, because we it's just all been hit and miss. Remember when you and I, grew up with the food pyramid with all that stuff on it, and we just accepted that because people said that's what you have to eat to stay healthy. We don't know what we have to eat to stay healthy. I mean, nobody really does. It's all been a trial and error, whatever's out there to eat. But are there factors that are natural factors, enhancers that
I would think yes, Ed. But
I would think yes too.
I also think that probably they're going to turn out to be things that are completely
undigestible.
Yes, like lima beans.
Worms,
it's going to turn out to be something awful. I mean, for me, it's lima beans. We all have our own private horrors. But something that's just completely indigestible.
Well, nothing ventured, nothing gained, you know. I have already started this, and there are a couple of things that are very interesting, but I do not know if they have to be ingested, along with another substance and act synergistically, or if they're single enhancers. So we'll find out.
What if we found out we could all get another 100 years of life if we just, went outside, gathered, and ate as many crickets as we could? You know, whatever it is, it's going to turn out to be awful. I just know it.
Well, remember Jiminy Cricket? I'm no fool, no siree. He's going to live to be 103. So the Freudian slip there.
Yes, yes, yes. Anyway, I wish you luck in that arena. People want to know certain things when you're on the air. One of them, chiefly, naturally, without question, you have a website called killshot.com, right?
That's one of my websites, my primary website.
We have, yes, but still you have one, and it's worried people, Ed. The shot over the bow, you said no, you said no, you said no when I mentioned something, and then one time we had a monster, a true monster.
Which I predicted 6 weeks in advance.
It was that's right, you did, and it was a true monster, and you said, yes, Art, finally, that's the shot across the bow. Now, the next one up is the kill shot, and...
The kill shot is a series of solar flares that heats up the atmosphere.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
That's
but
what we... That's
people want to know when, Ed. The hardest thing in remote viewing, they want to know when.
The closest we can get is, as I mentioned before, and I mentioned in the kill shot DVD itself, is when a space shuttle, a U.S. space shuttle, is forced down by a meteor shower, that is as close as, that's the beginning of the end in terms of...
You have no idea how many people have taken this to heart. I mean, a lot of them talk about this, Ed. It's strangely so, in fact. So many have called and reminded me of what you said about that. As if they're anticipating it, as though they believe that will occur, that a space shuttle will come down because of meteors. Not necessarily hit by one, but perhaps afraid of forecast. Yes.
Yeah, that's as close as we've been able to come, which is close enough. It, because we were looking at the nearest recognizable preceding event to the series of serious solar flares. So the history that solar physicists have and geophysicists have of the Earth, in fact, I emailed you something the other day. There was an unprecedented proton storm, I think.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
It said, this is a kind of storm that we've never, ever had in recorded history before.
Yeah, that's the problem. We keep basing our stuff and extrapolating forward on recorded history, and that doesn't allow any room for unprecedented events, which occur all the time.
Well, bearing in mind, recorded history, folks, is actually really, really a tiny, tiny little bit of history. Recorded history is tiny. So it doesn't mean that. I mean, the sun obviously is capable of many things that they're not aware of, and the kill shot apparently one of them, huh?
Yeah, it's a serious, it's probably the most serious thing using remote viewing, expert remote viewing as an over-the-horizon radar, so to speak.
Well, to remind people, Ed, the shot over the bow was reported by scientists as one that pegged the needle on the spacecraft that recorded this kind of thing. It pegged the needle. In other words, scientists in their wildest dreams never dreamed that there could be an explosion on the sun as big as there was. It just went beyond the ability of the instruments to even measure it. They had to end up guessing that it was a X 30 or 48, or they had no idea. It was immensely strong, stronger than in all of recorded history. Here we are again, right?
It was a mega flare, yeah.
A mega flare, yes, of a size they didn't think could even happen. So you're right about that. They don't know much with regard to recorded history.
But when as remote viewers, if you do turn your attention to things that are not as mundane as the Chinese psychic warfare program or what herbs to eat to ameliorate the conditions of, let's say, rheumatoid arthritis, if you look further ahead and you look big and strategic, there's some really grim things on the horizon. And I, you know, even Dr. Doom here doesn't want to go into those tonight.
Well, why? Well, grim before the big event that's going to take out so many people on Earth, so much.
Well, that one. That's what I'm talking about. This series of atmosphere heating flares that we've been seeing.
That's such a worrisome forecast.
It's very worrisome indeed.
Time scale, Ed. When might we start seeing flares of the magnitude you're talking about?
Well, let's see. The shuttle, we got a shuttle launch soon, and the shuttle series is almost obsolete, so they're not going to be in the inventory much longer. Perhaps maximum of 4 years is my guess. So
absolutely true.
I think we're pretty close.
You know, that's a very good
point.
Yeah, it's a very good point. We're not going to be flying shuttles very much longer, are we? Everybody knows that. They virtually announced the end of the program. I'm frankly surprised we're still using them and haven't come up with something else.
Well, I mean, that's what the old SS-18 is doing now. It's launching because the shuttle can. It's launching our satellites for us. The booster is. The rocket is still in the inventory. So it's putting up satellites now because the space shuttle is not dependable.
You really are absolutely right. And what you're saying is going to happen, then, is going to happen in the limited life of the shuttle yet. And so that means soon.
We're close.
That means pretty soon, within the next few years even.
Correct.
What should people do if your predictions begin to come true and we start getting hit with a series of life threatening flares, which I don't consider to be impossible at all, by the way, what would you say to people? How would you counsel people? What do they do, Ed, to be safe?
It's a hard call because you're talking about the entire Earth like a rotisserie being heated up.
Yep.
And,
let me try another approach.
Using remote viewing, for instance, what I've done is look for sanctuaries. In fact, many of my students...
Exactly. That's what I'm asking about, Ed. What are you going to do?
Well, if I can get to a sanctuary in time, which I probably will be able to do, you have to know where they're at, then I will probably do that. If I can't, then I can't. But I'd rather be, in that case, I'd rather be as close to my loved ones as possible.
I mean, do you know how short a warning period you've got for a flare of the magnitude you're talking about?
It isn't just that. It's the idea that it's not protons necessarily coming down to the deck. It's the atmosphere heating up pretty rapidly to the point where lots of water sources dry up and crops fail quickly.
Yep.
So, I mean, you've got time to go places, but you have the places that you go to have to have a supply of fresh water, and you've got to have some food. And it may be that protons come down to the deck, and then you're in big trouble because you're gonna fry as well as the atmosphere.
What about caves?
Yeah, caves would work. And any subway systems would work, things like that. But you still have to have fresh water and a couple weeks supply of food to sit that out. So, and then we're not talking about the whole Earth being affected too. We're talking about belts. In the Killshot DVD, I've mentioned on your show that interestingly, the areas that are more eminently survivable appear to be those areas where the concentration of crop circles has been over the last 20 years. And that's north of, I think, 48 degrees or 50 degrees, something like that. It's in a belt, a band that stretches pretty far from North America across through Eastern Europe.
Where in North America is this belt?
The belt's probably, it's a little bit north of, I'd say the border between North and South Dakota, north all the way up through into central Alberta, Saskatchewan, that belt there across the British Isles into Europe.
Fascinating.
And partially Scandinavia and Europe. Wherever crop circles have been laid down, it turns out that the circles have no meaning. It's the place that has a meaning. Something out there is saying, here, these are survivable spots.
That's really interesting.
And I cover that in my DVD.
Do you happen to cover in your DVD how to discern between a real crop circle and something a bunch of college kids did?
No. No, I figure I leave that up to people to do. The ones that the college kids do don't have the effects on the stock. I mean, Linda Moulton Howe is quite. I've talked to her about that.
Oh yes,
she's quite. She can tell you probably as well as anybody else what to look for in terms of determining whether Fred and Joe stomped this down at night with their buddies or whether another.
So crop circles are marking safe places.
Yes, essentially they are. They're marking bands predominantly where that are survivable.
Whatever you may think of Major Ed Dames, fact is, long before it happened, and what I'm referring to is this sun flare that scientists said can't be. It's never happened. It's astoundingly large, larger than in our wildest imagination, because you see, they had to launch the equipment that would monitor the sun. And so in their wildest imagination, they never imagined a flare that could be so much bigger than anything they had ever previously measured, that their equipment was no good. He called it. He did call it. And here he is, Major Ed Dames. I always want to give you an opportunity to plug whatever you're doing, you come here and pay us a visit, and I can pay you back this way. I know you've got an RV course.
Oh, I love to teach.
So how do people get involved? There's a phone number or something, or what can they order?
There are live operators if they need them, or they can order a DVD set. It's a very effective set.
You've got live operators at this hour?
I do. I do.
There's like 4:11 on the East Coast, you know.
Oh, I make sure they. I use remote influencing to keep them awake.
And what can they order?
You can order my complete DVD set at learnrv.com, or they can call the following number.
Uh-huh.
Toll free, 1-866-607-8439.
1-866-607-8439, correct. And they get a complete RV course?
That's right. Or they can just order the first DVD if they want to just test the waters, but it's cheaper to order the whole set. Also, there was a caller earlier in your show that asked about a lottery DVD. And
oh, yes.
They can go to rvlottery.com and look at that. But if they really want to see the payoff, they go into my community forum, which is at learnrv.com.
Uh-huh.
They can see my team members' actual winning tickets for the last few months.
All right. Well, this impresses me, Ed. Of course, you know, if you can teach somebody to actually hit the lottery numbers, now you've done something real serious. And you know what I was thinking, Ed, and maybe you can answer this. If you heard the first hour, then you heard me think it out loud. If you taught enough people to hit the lottery couldn't exist. So that must mean that what? People keep their mouths shut about it?
Actually, beyond three numbers, you know, the tickets that you see, actually, we have a couple of winning sports tickets there, too. You can teach. These are pretty easy to do. But beyond three numbers, it gets more difficult. Like my business partner, my friend, Brent Miller, wants to break the bank in one state, and I'm not going to mention the state. Now, this is boring for me because, you know, I don't need anything. My life.
Boring to me.
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
I said it's not boring to
me. I understand.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I understand. But he really wants to break the bank at a particular state. And I said, if you do that, they'll never have another lottery.
That's right.
Yeah, and there's one particular state that doesn't have any limits. It doesn't have any call. You know what I mean? It hasn't provided a backstop for them to pull out, so you can.
Is he going
to
do it?
He wants to. And,
do you believe he's going to do it?
Well, I've seen him do it many times in many other places. He'll need about 2 weeks straight to pull this off. And right now, he's too busy with my stuff to take. I'm not going to give him 2 weeks off. So he's going to have to wait till I go back to the Ukraine and sneak one in. But this is kind of a joke in-house. I don't like my team members doing this, and yet they slip them in once in a while. So if you want to actually see the winning lottery tickets, they're posted in the forum.
Well, that, of course, appeals to, I don't know, a certain nature in people. And
well, it's fun. It's fun. I mean, when you first do it, remote viewing is fun, too. It's an adventure.
But your view, then, does match mine, that at least so far, until your friend carries out his threatened action, that people have been doing it, but keeping, basically, their mouths shut.
Except for my team members, because I like for my team members to be teachers, too. And I like for them to actually show, you know, to strut their stuff and walk the talk.
How could you resist not displaying the fruits of their efforts?
I'm very proud of my students, and so I tolerate that, yes.
I see. All right, here they come. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning. Hello?
Hi. I had a question. You said earlier that you could target operating systems, correct?
What I was specifically referring to are the transistors in chips within computers, yes.
And you can do that at any time and at any distance?
Correct.
So I just happen to have a laptop here right next to me. Would you be able to target it?
Oh, you're offering your laptop up as a sacrificial lamb, sir? Is that correct?
Yes, yep.
I see. What kind of laptop is it?
It's a HP Pavilion.
Oh, that's expensive. Are you really sure you want to do it?
Not expensive.
Oh, really?
Windows XP Home Edition is the operating system.
Okay, he's even telling you what the operating system is, Ed. Where are you located, caller?
Indiana.
Indiana.
Yep.
And let's have your address.
No, no, no. We don't need that.
Your social security number. No, I'm just kidding. Well, you know what? Could you do it, Ed?
Yes. We take. We don't even need his name or his location or whatever. What we do is we take, because there's already chain of custody from my mind to the caller. So my unconscious knows knows the caller. So I can refer to the laptop he's referring to. I use that as my remote viewing target.
Then you're giving permission for it to be destroyed, right, caller?
Yes.
Yeah. It would take me 40 minutes to achieve lock on, to make sure lock on, and then probably another 15 to start the effect rolling.
All right.
But I would use two other viewers in tandem.
All right, let's do it. Let's do it, Ed. You don't even have to do it right now. I'll give you I'll give you a week.
What? Which one? His?
His laptop. Yeah. Would you mind killing his laptop?
I wouldn't mind at all, but I would rather take something where we make sure that we have an observable effect.
This caller is going to be honest as the day is long, right, caller?
Yes. If you
suffer a sudden catastrophic failure, you would report that to me, wouldn't you?
Yes. I mean, what would that consist of? I mean, like a blue screen or?
Oh no, I mean, we're talking about a total disabling, crushing blow.
Actually, not necessarily. If the operating system can recover, or again, we're talking about a momentary clock loss where if the system can recover, the system can recover. But we would attack probably the clock and or the operating system itself.
What that means is
slowing down the magnetic field so that the computer would not work during the time we did that.
You willing to give it a try?
Am I?
Yes, Ed. Are you?
No, I'm not, because I have other things to do. But I'm saying that's what we would do. That's how we would handle that.
All right. Well, somebody else out there with the talent listening this morning, this man has just given permission for his computer to be destroyed. And so get him, guys. All right.
but don't do Larry King's pacemaker.
Caller, do me a favor and report back to me the health of your operating system within the next week or so.
Yeah, sure will.
Have a good day, and thank you very much for calling and offering that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hi, this is another Ed from the center of the Oregon coast.
Ed and Ed, okay.
That's right. And Art, you know, I appreciate it. I'm an insomniac. I have a seizure disorder, brain damage in the right front part of my brain, and you're a good man.
Thank you.
And two-part question. Number one, does Ed can he see what government agents listen to your show nightly and take notes and monitor everything? And number two, in regards to the Petri dish incident, cosmic energy, the universal energy passing through us even now as a conduit for said test.
Well, I don't know what cosmic energy is.
Well, the energy that's passing through us right now as we sit here.
Well, there's lots of energy. There's RF waves.
Right.
There's your local TV station. So,
the energy coming from the universe.
Coming from the universe. Well, let's see. You're part of the universe too, so you're emanating energy. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's energy all around us.
Right.
And it's coming from the universe, you could say.
Okay.
And
so what was the question again, caller? My name's...
I'm just wondering if that possibly could be the conduit for the distance between the two Petri dishes.
For me, anything's possible. I've seen lots of strange things. Anything is possible.
Okay. But there is a conduit. There is a communication. It's happening somehow. More than just the coincidence of the shape or something or another symmetry of the object.
Well, we don't even understand the life force. I mean, how is that connected to, how do you turn life on? So I don't want to know all the answers. I'm a simple man. I'd shoot myself if I knew all the answers. It takes the fun out of life.
Good morning. You're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yes, I had some questions just about what advice you would have for young recruits.
As far as students, are you talking about students of mine?
Maybe possibly students are even, you know, working for the government or something like that.
Our government does not utilize PSYOPs anymore. It's utilized in video games and by the Matrix Intelligence Agency. That's it.
Okay. So then working for you, what advice would you have?
Well, it takes about 3 months to learn the basics of remote viewing, another 3 months to get good at it, and then about a year of practice against very, very difficult and complex systems to start to become good. So I wouldn't even consider hiring anyone until that point.
Okay. All right.
If you want to learn more, go to learnrv.com and talk to the professionals there. They'd be glad to talk to you about that, my team members.
Great. And then for personal, I guess, experiences or personal training or whatever, like your own explorations of it, would you advise using, like, different emotions like love or even certain, I don't know, not even like numbers or something like that to kind of lock onto to use as almost energy drivers?
No. It's all rigorous and disciplined and standardized, and those techniques are you can download those right now. I've got them on my website. You can see exactly, and you can download the manual, the guide to the Learn RV DVDs, and you'll see how we acquire a target.
Ed, how about the occasional savant in this area?
The very natural psychics.
Yes.
Well, it was the natural psychics that we used in the Department of Defense to model this and turn it into a teachable skill. So when I teach them, as I mentioned before on past shows, when I teach a natural, then they can produce for a given period of time, let's say an hour, twice as much detail as someone like me could produce who is not a natural. I'd have to do twice. I could still solve a problem in an hour, but I would not have as much detail as somebody who's naturally talented.
I would suppose that part of your job would be sort of a indescribable attempt or ability to manage gifted people, and that's not an easy job. I mean, to keep them focused and to sort of get into their mind. And
I think I don't know. You must be pretty perspicacious because yes, I had that problem this week with somebody who knows who she is, a DVD student, and that's exactly the problem. They have to be managed because they produce so much data that they begin to lose the forest for the trees.
Yeah, I can see that would be your job. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, hi, Ed. This is Tom in San Diego. You had mentioned California and China, so I had two questions. One, are you coming back to San Diego?
I grew up in San Diego. I'm moving back to California from the islands. I've been in next week, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I took your class down here. I loved it. My question was about China. You mentioned that children were being trained, and I was wondering if you've ever associated with some Montessori schools or some alternate education systems or even some prisons. I think children, you're right, are more open-minded, but prisons are a captive audience, to see if you can get some positive results out of those groups.
Hey, the military was a captive audience. These guys had to do whatever I wanted. So, yes, I've dealt with captive audiences before. You know, Sergeant Riley, sit down, put your pen on the paper, here we go.
Hey, caller, you're obviously one of Ed's students, huh?
Yes.
Okay. May I ask you, not planned, I just want to ask you, with your skill, how's it worked out? I mean, how did you do in class, and what are you doing with it now?
Well, I found that, you know, I'm an engineer.
Yes.
And I work with you know, 40,000 different part numbers and so forth, and I'm a
sure.
little too analytical to get out of my brain. I don't find that I have the patience to practice and so use it or lose it.
Did you, when you were in the course, did you get to the point, caller, where you absolutely believed that what was being taught was as real as breathing?
Yes, I got a sense that the group could accomplish something. And in fact, it had something to do with, you know, large tidal wave type of action. And I'd say 7 out of 10 were pretty much on target, and I was 50% of the way there by the end of the first day.
That's quite remarkable.
I have a question for you, Art. You know, Years ago, you said you never wanted to learn this because there's some things you just don't want to know. Have you changed your mind?
No, I have not. I appreciate your question. The answer is no, I have not. I think that this ability is real. I guess I've thought that for a very long time now. It is real. But no, I don't want to know. There are some things, even many things about the future that I don't want to know. I don't know why I don't want to know them, but I don't.
I'm the same way. I mean, let's take love life, for instance, or that kind of thing. I don't want to look at that. If I'm in a relationship, for instance,
yes,
I don't want to know if that relationship's going to fail.
Right.
No, really. You know, I'd rather
let it be a surprise.
Yeah. Who wants to know that kind of stuff?
Well, you're right. I mean, the moment you knew, it would sour it from then on. So really, that information is very harmful to your immediate well-being.
Yeah, or maybe I'm just a coward.
Well, maybe me too. In other words, I know I'm going to die, Ed. I'd rather not know the hour and the circumstance.
Nor would you want to know if your loved ones were going to be hurt or in an accident or those kinds of things. No. I'm not going to look.
And for the reasons that you and I are just talking about right now, we're unselling your product.
That's okay. I'd rather go with the truth than the product. You know, of course, my marketing agents are going to go through the roof on that one, but they know who I am. They know what I'm
about. On the other hand, lottery numbers are good.
Yeah, people have a lot of fun with that. When I first taught people how to do that, I had to discover the process too, and then I teach that process the RV lottery DVD was actually produced by my students. I didn't want any really part of it. I just liked to teach.
Really?
RV. Yes, it was produced by my students.
They got so enthusiastic by it.
Oh yes, very enthusiastic
from it, and I can understand that enthusiasm.
Especially
I really can.
When they win money, a lot of money.
No question about it. Sure, I could. So, if anybody did it, I'm sure they're just an absolute believer right now, aren't they?
Oh, they're happier than the pig, and you know what?
Uh huh.
They're very happy.
All right, we're going to pause here. Many, many more questions. Once again, Major Ed Dames. Major Dames, I just said something that I really do feel. This stuff coming out of Princeton is beginning to get overwhelming, and from other sources and scientists and people that I talk to, you know, legitimate theoretical physicists, they're all beginning to kind of cozy up together to this same concept, this same idea of the power of the mind. It's beginning to come from other sources now, therefore I think that the wider public, general public consciousness is about to get invaded with this. I think it's going to be in the mainstream press soon on a regular basis. What do you think?
I think it will be a good thing. It will be the first time in probably the last 35 years that this thing that we call the unconscious part of our minds will finally be looked at anew as something that is important. And when unconscious was first suggested as an entity by the likes of Carl Jung, it was poo-pooed as, well, since we can't understand it, it probably isn't important.
Yes, but see, it's getting to the point where, understand it or not, we're beginning to get to where we can prove it.
In my business, we know that consciousness is just the tip of the iceberg. And the unconscious it holds and stores and acts and reacts in ways that far surpass the capacity of conscious awareness. That's what we believe.
Well, you're way ahead of me there, but it does look like a lot of this that you talk about, as the basis of what you talk about, is getting ready to be kind of general public knowledge. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hello?
Hello.
Something happened really strange about a week ago to my boyfriend, and I wonder if it's related to what you've been talking about. My first thought when I found out what it was there was some type of psychic or technology that was used to do this. He has a truck that has a three seats in the front. The center part, the back of the seat folds down. It was folded down. He went to get gas for his car, didn't have any pockets, so he put the credit card on that center seat. When he got to the gas station, he hadn't got out of the car yet. The windows were rolled up. He went to reach for the credit card, and he could see a hand, like a transparent hand, where he could see the credit card through the hand, and it just whipped the credit card back just like a vacuum so fast, you know, it just was almost instant. He lifted up the back of the seat. There was nothing there. Totally freaked out. Came back home. Got me. We started going through the truck. We went through the small area behind the seats. There was like one of the windshield visors that you put up, folded up back there. He pulled that up on the floor of the cab, up against the back wall, underneath this sun visor was the credit card. Almost like an attempt to take it had happened, but it didn't quite go through.
All right. Well, so then, Ed, remote interference.
No. That's an act of apportation.
Apportation. I'm sorry. That's right.
That's apportation at work. But that would have spooked the heck out of me, too. But that's what I mean by apportation, when something disappears right in front of your eyes and pops up somewhere else. Usually you have to look for it, and it's in the local area. That's an act of apportation.
And you think there will be more and more of this kind of thing that...
Well, I have no idea what the agency was behind that. I'd have to remote view it.
Yes, I understand. Nevertheless, the fact that it is now being done means that Murphy is going to make his way on more than usual rounds.
Yeah, I think Murphy's operating... I think the Earth is going through some changes here, and I don't understand them, but I think we're in for Mr. Toad's... wild ride.
Oh, I'm with you on that one. Wild card line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Happy 6-0, Art from Sedona, Arizona.
Thank you.
Hey, Major James, a comment quickly about the fall of the Soviet Union, and then I'd like to ask a question concerning China. Your mentor, Ingo Swann, and his coherency theory of consciousness to make positive changes, well, I see that in the world of music. For example, a Russian sociologist and author, Artomy Trotsky, said, "The Beatles have done more for the fall of communism than any other Western institution." And then watching this DVD, Paul McCartney in Red Square, just today, before 100,000 Russians, including President Putin in 2003, confirms it for me. Because the DVD has interviews of Russians within this program, and they talk about this coherent nature of this music in the 60s and 70s that sort of instilled a sense of real freedom in millions of people to where this communistic propaganda fell flat.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating, and it may be right. Ed?
I don't know enough about the subject, nor have I studied anything in terms of the sociological impact and to really be able to comment intelligently.
All right. Well, I think it's a fascinating concept. Caller, what about China?
Well, why would China want to upset such a large market as the USA for their economy and buying our treasury notes in favor of remote influencing?
Oh, very good question. Ed, they're, on the one hand, tied up with this. I mean, they have our bonds. If we got in trouble, if they did something awful to us, they'd be in trouble too, right?
China has 50-year plans. The Russians had 15, and East Germans had 15-year plans. America has 1 to 5-year plans. China is in it for the long run. We're going to go to war with China. China is going to come out on top no matter how you cut it. And the war may be economic and probably will be, but they're going to win. So they have to be also prepared to win a real battle, a real war
as
well.
You're answering a question I asked you earlier in the program, and that was about the Chinese mind. Here's one really major difference. You're telling me they think and plan in 50-year cycles, something we don't even come close to doing.
Right.
That's a major difference in...
And when it happens, it's too late. When you know that what they have, they've already won. That's the way the Chinese are. They're super quiet. They're super secretive. And by the time you know what's happening to you, it's too late. And that's what's going to happen to us.
Got it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, sir.
Well, calling from a suburb of Philadelphia,
but having to listen to you on a station from Reading, Pennsylvania, because the Philadelphia station doesn't carry you on Saturdays and Sundays.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm a personal believer in this stuff, and I had a personal experience with someone similar to the woman that you see on the television show Medium. I had her apartment robbed, and she helped me find my stuff. She described these three people that lived right around the corner from me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I believe this stuff, but that's not why I'm calling. What have you and your people done on trying to find Osama bin Laden?
Huh. Well, that's certainly a long story, isn't it, Ed?
It's a long one, yeah. Could we pinpoint Osama bin Laden? We know that he was injured. We know that he's alive. Could we pinpoint him? Yes, we can. But I don't want to get into why we don't do it anymore, because that we're asked that question all the time. I just don't want to deal with Mr. bin Laden anymore.
Well, you got stung.
We were under such pressure to find him. Well, the first thing we did at 9/11, I think most of your listeners know, I went after, within 36 hours, my team had pinpointed, I wanted to know who financed the attack. That was my target. Where did the financing come from? And so it took about 24 hours to have sketches of a target, and another few hours, probably six, to identify the target as the tomb of Ahmad Shah Durrani, the original architect of Kandahar, and the underground bunker complex, which was the command post for the financiers of that attack. That's mm-hmm. when we knew that it was financed from Afghanistan.
Ed, are you familiar with the NBC show Medium?
I don't watch television. Hardly.
You don't watch TV? It's about a real person, Ed, named Alison Dubois. And she, in real life, works with both local and federal agencies, and quietly, for example, works for a prosecutor, Ed, and is able to discern the truth about an alleged incident, for example. And you can see the use to a prosecutor of somebody of those talents. Anyway, this TV show is based on what she does. And I wonder, do you have any sense, Ed, of how many Alison Dubois, I'm dying to interview the lady, the real Alison Dubois, but do you have any idea how many of these Alison Dubois quality people are scattered across the U.S. that we don't know about?
I think there's quite a few of them. It's just that with natural talent, the reason we could not use people like her in the military was because their work wasn't consistent, and we were dealing with life or death situations where deadly force would be used, which is a lot different than the prosecutor asking for leads. You know, we had to develop something, and we did, that would be able to guide Delta Force in and tell them where to shoot as soon as they busted through the door.
Yeah, I've got it.
And so we had to be much more exacting. But as far as the naturals out there, there's a whole bunch of them. Most of them are quiet.
Many of them working quietly for, you know, in jobs like that, for example?
No. Many of them hiding from people because they don't want others to know what they can do. Or becoming schizophrenic because they can't control what they have.
True enough. I would think such a talent would be maybe more of a burden to the person experiencing it than a blessing.
So many people I've met think that they want that kind of talent, but I'm telling you, from what I've dealt with in my 21-year career, it can be a curse as well as a blessing.
I bet. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Good evening, Art Bell and Major Ed Dames. My name is Suleiman. I'm calling from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Okay.
And I am a world event psychic. I am one of those individuals that you were just talking about. I have that talent. And first, I want to say happy birthday to you, Art, and my condolences in regards to your cat.
Thank you for both.
And Art, I want you to know that I've used my abilities. I have a lot of cats and dogs and some magnificent animals that have passed. And I want you to know that I've seen the other side. Absolutely beautiful. And I communicate with my animals constantly and always know.
Okay, do you have a question from the mayor?
Yes, I do.
Good.
In regards to you, Mr. Dames, I think going back to California might be a mistake. I'd like to know, it, with your remote viewing, have you seen the earthquakes that I saw that's coming up, the potential of North Korea striking California, especially Los Angeles? Do you see any of those events taking place in the very near future?
All right. The earthquake question is really good. And you think not, huh?
No. The last show I said that the next real catastrophe, the next danger in terms of natural catastrophes is the eruption of Mount Tarawera and the North Island of
New
Zealand.
That's right. Yes, you did. And North Korea. North Korea, you've spoken about, of course, for years now.
Mm-hmm. They're going to test the nuke, and then they're going to use one.
They're going to test it, then they're going to use one.
Yeah, they're going to up the ante in terms of nuclear blackmail. I think that will happen soon by testing one, and then eventually they'll use one on the Korean Peninsula.
Well, surely if they test one, the world will quake. I mean, politically, it will quake. There's no question about it.
And the U.S. will saber rattle and up the ante in terms of militaristic behavior, not nuclear blackmail, and that will drive them to actually use one. It'll be a rationale for them to use one.
Got it. Good morning. You're on the air with Major Ed Dames.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Ed. It's Clark in Calgary.
Yes.
It goes to intention. If everybody say we went through a 3-year drought and we've just had maybe a 1 in 500 year rain, the water's going over the dams and people are flooding out. They've never seen anything like that before. Never. So it goes to the idea with regards to the kill shot that if you have a group of people who want to call down, say, hellfire and brimstone, and that is somehow interpreted or transmuted or the energy going out to influence, say, the sun for this kill shot, hasn't somebody kind of just shot themselves in the foot?
No group that I know of has called for hellfire and brimstone to come down from the sky. Do you know of a group like that?
It's just, not necessarily hellfire and brimstone, but just say hatred. As an emotion, as the group psyche, the great subconscious, that then may, grossly influence or even mildly influence a pattern that would then exaggerate itself.
Here's one for you, Ed. We're thought of by many in the world as the great Satan, right?
Correct.
The United States, we're interfering, meddling in the Middle East. We're actually moving people to strap on, explosives and blow themselves up almost on a daily basis now in Iraq. In other words, there is a very great deal of bad ill will or intent, if you will, pointed at us. How is that liable to affect the very complex thing that is the United States of America?
Well, I think unconscious, mind is outside of time, too. So if you go back to something like the Crusades, where we went in and that was... You know what the Crusades did.
Sure.
In terms of that part of the world. Maybe this idea of karma and payback is true. The sins of the fathers are visited upon them, the sons of the seventh generation, blah, blah, blah. Maybe all that's true. Because mind outside of time. And payback can be delayed, but what goes around comes around. I mean, I will tell you, as a personal experience, there was a Wednesday morning and that first desert storm, where we killed a whole lot of sons and fathers and brothers a whole lot, unnecessarily, and that's why I resigned my commission. And I knew that payback would come. In fact, I told my colleagues, I said, guys, this is bad karma. This is going to come back and get us too. And CNN was not there that morning.
No, they weren't.
And American public will never know what happened then.
I've heard stories that, actually, I heard there were a couple of videos that aired in the first hours of that war that they aired one time, and then, like somebody threw a switch, Ed, they didn't air again. These involved helicopters mowing people down. These involved earth-moving equipment burying people alive, that kind of thing.
This one was far worse, Art. Far worse.
Far worse.
Far worse, yeah.
I heard those stories that they actually did air and then got yanked. So
this one, nobody was there to see this one.
Yeah. One last fast one. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Yeah. Hey, Art. Hey, Ed. This is William from Portland. I was wondering, Ed, you've mentioned a couple of times that you never watch TV. Do you find that television might degrade your ability to perceive or to use remote viewing?
Yeah, very good question. Does it? Is it a mindless monster that affects your abilities, Ed?
I can't stand it. I can't stand the soundbite, the music, the average. I just cannot stand it. It's just not something I like. I'm just personal opinion. I like peace and quiet. And television, my idea of purgatory is to tie me at a stake and watch car commercials, you know.
How then do you feel about the movie with Ben Kingsley that was made about what you do?
Well, he didn't play me. I was just his coach.
Well, I know, but I mean generally the subject of remote viewing.
I don't really care how the Hollywood portrays it. I just had so much fun, you know, making that movie and meeting Tom Cruise's partner and working with his company, and for me the fun eclipsed any the way they portrayed it. And I mean, it was such an honor to train Kingsley, and it removed me from my real life stuff, which is kind of gloomy. So it was a chance to have fun, that's all.
Well, that's true. Certainly a different world. All right, buddy, we're out of time. Again, as always, thank you so very much, Ed, and I will see you next time, buddy.
The pleasure is mine, my friend.